Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Tune Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney, pop pickers.
Oh, there it is. It's Tune Machine, and earlier in the week, we received a communication from the random pop blob who spews out a random chart for us to look at in these episodes, and it's time for us to say, random blob, use your gob, tell us how to do our job.
That's it.
And it says, 28th of June, 1984.
Whoa.
There. And our eyebrows flew off our faces when we were given that because it's a time in pop music that, you know, both of us love dearly. And it was randomly chosen. We didn't pick this deliberately for our own needs. But I immediately knew what was going to be in this chart as soon as I was given that date. But then I looked at the whole top 40, and out of the 40 songs in it, I properly like 31 of them.
I haven't counted it all up, but when I saw that it was 1984, I have always said consistently for many years that 1984 was the greatest ever year for pop music. So I had high hopes. When I looked through it, even like the hopes I had were outstripped by the reality, because the amount of songs that genuinely number in my all-time favourite pop tracks are all here, present and correct. It's astonishing that fate has dealt us this hand for only our third episode of Top Flight Time Machine. And it's for that reason that we've already decided that this is going to be a two-episode special, an omnibus.
At least. It could be a 10-part deep dive, Sam.
It's impossible. All of our favourite pop music is here. Well, I said to you just before we went on air, I think I can confidently say this is the best chart ever in the history of pop music.
Quite possibly.
And you said, well, we can't be certain without looking at all the other charts. But I would say almost all of my favourite pop songs are all here. Especially if you stretch it out, because we use the website, if you're interested, officialcharts.com. Which you can go onto and then just type in the date and you can look at any chart ever. And it'll actually throw up the top 100 singles. Now, if we're really going to get serious and dig deep, I don't know, for instance, you're a young man digging a hole with the intentions of ending up in Disney World.
Yeah.
That, which, by the way, this was exactly the sort of time I would have been doing that digging out the front.
Right. This would be the soundtrack to your digging.
This would have been the soundtrack to my peak digging years, and perhaps that's why I feel so affectionate towards the music. I would say that traditionally, one of the reasons that I theorised that 1984 was the best year for music was because I thought, well, I was 9 years old, and I sort of had this theory that 9 is the best year, right? When you're 9, what's great about it is that you've grown out of very young childhood, so you've become old enough to appreciate great culture, like, you know, so you're watching great TV, there was great films at the time, but you understand and appreciate pop music, right? And especially in those days with Top of the Pops, absolutely wonderful the way in which we shared in it. And But it's just before hormones kick in with the with the distraction of members of the opposite sex or the same sex, whatever you went for, and also the the sort of anger, the introspection, the confusing thoughts and feelings that go hand in hand with puberty and adolescence, right? You're before that, but you're after childhood where you don't fucking get things like pop music, right? So 9, football, your memories of football for when you're 9. So I thought it's 9 years old. That's why I'm biased and I think all the music is best. But look, you were a couple of years older than me and you agree. So I think it might just be that, forget all that theorising. It might just be that, objectively speaking, all of the best songs ever made happened to arrive around June 1984. There was something in the water, mate.
There was definitely something going on. I mean, with me, I was 11. I was just about coming up to 12 when this chart came out. And for me, I was on the cusp of that thing of already loving pop music, but beginning to explore a little bit to the fringes and some of the weirder stuff as well. Mm. And there's some of that in this chart that I was really into.
Yeah, there's pure mainstream pop, and there's some also, acts that are kind of more in the know stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it all made the charts, and I was. Funnily enough, my son, who's 8, so he's approaching this sort of what I have theorised is the sweet spot of life. He said to me yesterday, he said, I'm glad I wasn't my age back in your day." And I said, "Why?" Oh. He went, "Because all there was to do was watch Top of the Pops every day, right?" And that's because
I wish.
I wish. I said no, and I thought, what a weird thing to say, and it's because he hears me and my wife banging on so much, it probably is really tedious, Top of the Pops, kids, it was so great, and I sometimes try to make them watch bits of Top of the Pops on YouTube, obviously they couldn't give a shit, right, and I said, first of all, mate, I mean, I don't often lose my rag, but I nearly did, I went, first of all, mate, it wasn't every day.
Sit down, son.
It was once a week on a Thursday, and that's what made it so special.
Yeah.
I said, and second of all, it wasn't boring. It was the most joyous moment of everyone's week. And he said, but what about you having to sit through loads of music you didn't like? And I said, mate, that was half the point. You booed the songs you didn't like and you cheered the ones you did like, right? But secretly, although you were quite tribal and partisan about it, you did share in the collective joy of everyone's different sorts of music being celebrated. Mm-hmm. The BBC Radio have been doing the Great British Sing-Along every Thursday morning.
Have they?
I mean, I don't know if it's the sort of thing you'd like, Andy. You might find it annoying, but I have fallen in love with it because what they do is...
You've embraced it with gusto, have you?
Oh, so much. They have Radio 2... Zoe Ball always goes first. So they do Radio 2, Radio 1... Asian Network, BBC One Extra, and then Six Music. And they all go in a chain, and it gets broadcast across every station.
Right.
And they all hand over from one another.
Is it the same song? What? Different songs?
So the listeners of the station vote for a song, and it has to be in the spirit of togetherness, everyone, it's a British sing-along. So it has to reflect that station's ethos and tone.
Right.
But at the same time, it has to be able to cross boundaries, right? So yesterday was the last one because the rationale is lockdown's kind of fading out now. So they stopped, but they've been doing it for like 2 months or whatever.
All right.
And yesterday was the last one. And
do you stand on your doorstep or open your windows and do it?
You don't have to do anything. I mean, I did it. I listened to the whole thing.
Who's singing then?
With
the, he was doing the singing.
I was singing to myself, mate. I had the Bernard Langer, right? And I was just going around the kitchen. And then I had
sweep.
And then I had the
sing,
mop.
Sing, sing.
Mop, 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 sing, sing, sing. And it was perfect because I had it on. My son was trying to do his schoolwork, right? And he was moaning. And basically, so you got Zoe Ball, Radio 2. She plays All You Need Is Love by the Beatles. Wonderful.
Oh, good. Yeah.
You know, what? But almost the best song you could have for that sort of situation. So I'm singing along to that, loving it. Then she hands over to Radio 1. Greg James goes, this is a song that has been voted the best pop song of the last 10 years by Rolling Stone and various other outlets. And
is it Call Me Maybe?
No, but that would be a good choice. Okay. But it's actually better than that. And so that's how you know this is a banger, right? he goes, the performer is probably the most underrated pop star of all time, right? Like, whoa, yeah. Where's he going with this? And it is Dancing on My Own by Robin, right? Greg James, not the sort of bloke I can imagine you having a high opinion of.
No, I like Greg James. I like Greg James.
All right, well, yeah. I apologise. Well, he certainly went, I've never had a problem with him, but now, with those comments, I've thought he's gone right up in my estimation.
Knighthood, right
this,
now.
This fella knows his onions. So you've gone from All You Need Is Love to Dancing on My Own by Robin. Then it goes to Asian Network and they play... I've forgotten. I'm going to have to look it up. But it's a classic song. Then it goes to One Extra and they play a Beyonce track that I actually was unfamiliar with. I think it's called Love on Top. And then finally, Six Music ends with Changes by Bowie. And I thought, and I said to my son, I sung along to all of these tracks, right?
Even the ones you didn't know. You had
a go. The BBC Music one was the Beyonce one was the only one I didn't know. And I thought I was quite well versed on Beyonce songs, but it was a song I didn't know. But I sang along to all of them and even liked the Bowie one. And I said, that is what I'm trying to say to you, mate. That is what Top of the Pops was all about, right? A mix of songs, but that everyone felt good about listening to. We enjoyed them collectively. And ever since they cancelled Top of the Pops, this country has been going downhill. And that is no coincidence, Andy. No coincidence.
I'll tell you, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I'll tell you when exactly when Top of the Pops went tits up. It was when they started making them sing live.
Yeah. Like, why? Why did they do that?
It's a platform for the records they want you to go out and buy. People go, oh, they were miming. Yeah, they were miming. They were miming to the records they want you to go out and buy. That's the record they've made the in the record. Studio for you. That's the product. That's
it's not
what
going
it's for.
To see a band live.
It's
not
fucking later with Jules Holland. I don't want to see how good.
Thank God.
Fucking Phyllis Nelson can sing live, or even Chris de Burgh with The Lady in Red. I want to hear the record that I'm going to go out and buy. That's what it's about. It's the fucking chart.
I want it to sound exactly like it. And I tell you what, I don't like it. Like, yesterday, I was watching the Style Council on Top of the Pops doing, I think it was...
They were in this chart, of course, Style Council. Style Council were in every chart in the first half of the 80s, I think. Yeah. Between 83 and 86, they were in every chart every week. Are you rattling something?
Yeah, my watch. My metal watch. My 1984 style gold Casio.
Put it in your pocket, Delaney.
Yeah, I'll just put
it. Or hand it to me until the end of the lesson.
The song that I was trying to remember was Truth Hurts by Addictive. Addictive by Truth Hurts featuring Rakim. That was the one that Asian Network played. Anyway, we're talking about music's going on now, but the point is that, yeah, you're right. I was watching Style Council, and the problem was I felt that because Paul Weller was so cool, it was a brilliant performance. I think they were doing their song The Lodgers, right? Mm. And DC Lee was, in that period of time, I think the coolest human being of all time. No one cooler before or since. Everything about it was amazing, right? But she's sort of giggling. And I think they were both giggling because they were trying to show how they thought it was absurd that you couldn't sing live and you had to mime.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, come on, the Style Council, don't be like that. Andy Dawson's right. He worked in Our Price. He knows how the industry works, right? People want to know what the record sounds like. So play the game, yeah? The single version of a song is always the best version of a song anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't like live albums.
I hate live albums.
They're annoying, aren't they?
Yeah.
I hate when you have to hear the crowd sing. I hate when you hear that. Have you ever seen the Rolling Stones, like when you see clips of them doing live and they take songs that were very neat, beautiful 3-minute pop songs from the 60s and they make an absolute mockery of them with all sorts of silliness.
Yeah.
I don't think bands should be allowed to play their own songs live.
No, or even do shows.
No, I think they should play them down in the studio. I think they should make a really cool video, right? Hopefully with acting in. And then they should just leave it there.
I went to see Madness live a couple of years ago in, I think it's called Hardwick Hall near Darlington. Mm. And it was, the stage was at the bottom of this this lovely hill. And everyone was kind of sitting on the hill. so everyone had a good vantage point, and it was a lovely summer's evening. And before Madness came on, they played over the PA system. They played Pet Sounds, the album by the Beach Boys.
Lovely.
Played most of that album. And I thought, I'd pay good money to sit in the sunshine and just listen to Pet Sounds with a lot of people.
Agree.
Without a live band being on, just play the album.
That's why jukeboxes were so great, because when you're a bit pissed in the pub and you can just put on a load of songs that you like with your mates sitting around and then responding to them together, that's the best way to consume music, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
But no one wants a live band doing it.
No, when they're all a bit old and shit.
You better make a Madness come on and do shit versions of Our House and Baggy Trousers, where you'd much preferred that there'd just been a big screenplay in the videos, which were really funny as well. Because his name? The saxophonist would always be flying around playing his saxophone.
To be fair to Madness are a cracking night out to this day, because they don't fuck about with the formula. They just come on and do the hits.
They do the thing.
And
they
do them faithfully. So you can't go wrong with a night out of Madness.
If you're a pop star listening to this, please perform your hits faithfully.
Yes.
And please do not do any of your new material.
Don't do the new ones. No. We're not here for the new ones. Although it is useful for people to go to the toilet during the new ones.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get stuck into this chart.
There's the first song we want to start with, really. It's not just the centre point of this chart, I don't think. It's the centre point of 1984 music as a whole. So we'll just play a little bit of that first before we get stuck into it.
Relax, don't you rest when you want to go to rest. Relax, don't you rest when you want to come home. Relax, don't you rest when you want to suck it to rest.
That, of course, is Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which is one of the greatest pop songs ever made by anybody. And I will fight you if you fucking try to suggest otherwise. It's number three in the charts because it's on the way back up, Sam. It's June.
Quite a rare thing.
It hit the charts in the first week of 1984. We're at the end of June now. It went in at number 35. And it was on Top of the Pops on the 4th of January, 1984, when it was number 35. And I remember watching it then. I don't think I'd really heard it. And I was like, what the fuck is this? What is this noise? This was just, I mean, the fucking beat, the sound of the bass, the lyrics, the attitude they had. It was just, my God, this has just come out of nowhere. 1984 started and it's given me this. What the fuck else is going to come later? And it was up to number six the week after that appearance on Top of the Pops.
Was that Relax their first single?
Yeah.
So they came out of nowhere, right? How? Because when you look at them, even in context, it's hard to sort of understand in whose path they trod. They weren't the other big bands at the time. They had nothing to do with really. You know, you look at some of these bands who were like electro synth pop that were in the charts at the time. And then, of course, there was still like new romantic bands. They didn't really fit with anything. So, I mean, what is their story? I know Paul Morley was the sort of Svengali figure who kind of imagined them also.
Well, it kind of wasn't. He kind of came in to do that to put the icing on the cake, but it was Trevor Horn, the producer.
Of course.
Who he didn't manufacture them because Frankie already existed and they'd done stuff. And there was an early version of Relax that appeared on the Tube in 1983. So I'd probably seen that, but it was a lesser version, let's say. I think they played it live on the Tube and Trevor Horn hadn't really...
got involved.
He hadn't got involved, or it was, you know, it wasn't the finished version. But, I mean, Trevor Horn had already worked on stuff like ABC's Lexicon of Love album. Absolute classic.
Yeah.
He produced stuff for Dollar, Now, Dollar, to me, seemed like a bit of a joke group. It was a boy and a girl singing nice love songs. But you look back at the Dollar stuff now that Trevor Horn worked on, and it's stuff like Give Me Back My Heart and Handheld in Black and White and all that. And it was fucking great, great pop music. But Trevor Horn wanted something where he wasn't brought in to work on. He wanted to create a group and almost manufacture a group. And that was where ZTT, his record label, came in. That's where Frankie Goes to Hollywood came in. And he built up Relax with them, completely rebooted it from what it was originally. There's rumours that because the musicians in Frankie weren't good enough, that he brought in the Blockheads from Ian Dury and the Blockheads to work on it, and that the bass in it isn't from Frankie. This is Relax. Two Tribes. We're getting onto that later.
All right.
So I don't know how true that is. That might be a rumour, whatever.
Jalapeño.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Jalapeño.
But they didn't come out of anywhere. They were, Trevor Horn decided he wanted to make pop music that was just enormous and was unlike anything else. It kind of was like other stuff, because 83 there was like high energy stuff going on, the gay disco scene and all that, so it's born out of that.
But yeah, I mean, they looked like that, you know. Obviously they were in the garb of the 1980s gay disco. With the biker hats and the vests and all of that. But I think it was a naive time, wasn't it? I mean, everyone talks about their mums and dads' reaction when Boy George first turned up on Top of the Pops, which would have been a year or two earlier. But this was another thing where, as a child, to a child's eyes, I knew there was something strange, maybe...
Exactly.
Perverse is the wrong word, but to my young eyes, young mind, it was seen it.
Adult. I didn't, it was something you didn't know about.
I didn't know what. I didn't understand what they were on about, or why they were dressed that way, or why they had these cheeky knowing smiles on their faces. But I thought, well, there's something up here.
That week when it was number 35 and it was on Top of the Pops, I went out and bought it. And the cover of it, have you seen the cover of it?
What, of Relax?
Of Relax.
No.
It's
I must have owned it. I'm looking at it now.
Have a look at it. It's got a man and a woman who are back to back. The man is wearing nothing. He's very muscular, very taut. He's wearing nothing but what appears to be a leather jock strap, maybe. And they're back to back. The woman has got her arms wrapped around him. She's wearing like a leather bustier, which has got a spike coming out of the nipple.
I'm looking at it now. Amazing.
Like skin tight boots that go above the knee. She's wearing nothing in terms of downstairs underwear.
Yeah.
And it says on the front cover, Relax, don't do it when you want to, suck it to it. Relax, don't do it when you want to come. And I bought this and I looked at it and I thought, aye, this is something new. This is a world I know nothing about. I'm excited. I'm intrigued. I'm almost 12. What the fuck is going on here?
Well, we now know it was about bumming, and the and the rumour was, or the suggestion is, that the BBC banned it, or Mike Reed off of Saturday Superstore refused to play it because of its references to bumming. I interviewed him on the now rested, much loved television show Saturday's News thing a few years ago, and asked him about it, and he denied that he had
he's changed his story a bit over the years, hasn't he?
But what's interesting is, right, this was a time where you could have been forgiven for thinking, well, homophobia no longer exists because look at the culture that surrounds us. Look at this chart. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, spoiler alert, are also at number one with Two Tribes. At number three is Relax, a song specifically, a how-to crib notes, as far as I understand it, about how to do bumming, right?
Yeah.
At number four, Small Town Boy by Bronski Beat is a very is a beautiful, moving, poetic song. The story of a young boy who realizes that he is gay, comes out to his parents. His father is unsympathetic. He also is the victim of homophobic bullying, and therefore he has to leave his hometown.
He heads to
live a
to
life
London.
Elsewhere. Amazing video that tells the story really well as well. So there's another one. At number five, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go by George Michael, masquerading at the time due to what he perceived to be as a homophobic culture within the music industry and beyond, as a heterosexual.
A raging heterosexual.
A raging heterosexual. At number seven, Farewell My Summer Love by Michael Jackson, a nonce. And at number nine
John.
Elton John, Sad Song, Say So Much. A man who was so gay he was so gay and addicted to cocaine that he went full circle and accidentally married a woman.
A woman for a while,
That was so that's just a little bit of what was going on in the sexuality of the hit makers in the top 10 of 1984.
Go further down, High Energy by Evelyn Thomas is number 14, massive gear disco anthem. Searching, I Gotta Find a Man, Hazel Dean, number 24, again, big gear anthem. Let's Hear It for the Boy, Denise Williams, again, same category. So, I mean, gear disco had really gone mainstream by 1984. And I can't remember there being really overtly gay pop stars before this. Boy George in 83 was a breakthrough, but he was almost asexual, Lord George, wasn't he?
Yeah. And the fact that there was even debate around it in the playground and in the press.
Yeah.
Is he gay? Is he not gay?
Is he? The man? Like, the woman?
He's
an animal?
I'm pretty sure he's gay, guys.
What's gay mean?
Is he really? What's he actually do? How does it work? Well, listen to Relax. They spell it out pretty well. I mean, bloody hell. So just interesting as well. And also just looking at like number 12, White Lines by Grandmaster Flash, a song about cocaine. I mean,
drug powders.
Edgy times, man. But what's interesting is this was the mainstream, mainstream of pop music. So what I felt was that when you got into the 90s, people thought there was two different things, right? There was edgy music that might be music you listen to a club, or might be music from the streets like hip hop, or might be indie music, right? And then there was pop music, and people would talk about Take That and the Spice Girls and say, this pop music is manufactured music where they don't write the songs themselves. It's very sanitised, the name at a teen market, right? And they don't even decide what they wear. Everything is manufactured by behind-the-scenes record executives, right? And that is really how people thought pop music always was. But if you just went back 10 years from there to 1984, the most mainstream records that were selling millions of records, right, to children, as well as sometimes grandparents too, none of it conformed to the Spice Girls Take That model or template, right? Because Frankie Goes, where are we talking about Wham, who were just two lads who came up with a load of songs themselves, right? And created their own image. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, you know, you got songs about cocaine, anal sex, right? Break dancing, gay discos. Right, the fucking lot. You got the Smiths at number 20 with a song called Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now. Right? This was... All human life was there, right there in the charts, selling millions. The outsiders, right, the misfits, were the mainstream.
Yeah. Who was the mainstream?
The misfits.
You've got, look, 23, Ultravox, Dancing With Tears In My Eyes, about nuclear war. Two Tribes we mentioned earlier, will I mention again? No. Nuclear war. Number 38, Madness, One Better Day, song about homelessness.
I Want To Be Loved, Turning The Town Red by Elvis Costello at 25. That was a double A side, and Turn the Town Red was the theme to Scully. Which we were talking about on this show some months ago, and I ended up rewatching a lot of it
because I
was actually in it. And yeah. that was a program with a lot of kind of gritty social realism. It was about unemployment, about the impact of Thatcherism. Elvis Costello had written a song about that. It was at 25.
I've got a theory about this pop scene of the early 80s being as subversive as it was, and I think a lot of them were all children of Boy. They were all really influenced by Boy when they were younger, and then to a lesser extent maybe punk. And they did their own thing. And then when they all got massive, like Spandau and Duran Duran and Wham split up in 86, they all got massive and they all lost their creative mojo. Perhaps they took some drug powders, which affected that creativity. Mm. And they kind of went off the boil massively. And then Stock Aitken Waterman came along. Everything was sanitized. I've got a lot of time with Stock Aitken Waterman.
Yeah.
But it was different. And then record companies got a chokehold again on the pop stars and the talent, and moulded them into how they wanted them to be in order to sell, whereas there was a lot more freedom in the early 80s.
But these bands that you mentioned, Spandau, funnily enough, I've got Gary Kemp's book here right next to my bed in front of me, which I've been dipping in and out of, which is a lot of fun. But these bands, they created a template, like you say, born out of probably a love of Bowie, I guess maybe the T-Rex to a lesser extent, punk, right? And then they created this idea, these 80s pop stars, of like a very bright, neon lit, mad, outrageous, eccentric sort of like unusual way of presenting themselves, and fusing that with music that had a populism to it, it's often in its production, but also a depth to it in its lyrics and proper musicality, and there was good musicians and stuff. They created all of that. And they came up with the ideas that years later, Stock Aitken and Waterman, and then later people like fucking Simon Cowell, they basically stripped it of the soul, but took the surface and basically scaled it up, started applying it to loads of bands. And so if you're like Nick Rhodes or Gary Kemp or George Michael, God rest his soul, you're sitting there thinking, you fuckers, we came up with that as something meaningful, and you've just like nicked it and turned it into something that's bullshit.
Product.
And that's why sometimes I get annoyed with people who otherwise have, you know, decent taste in music, like they know their stuff, but they will say, oh, I bloody love the Spice Girls. Oh, you've got to love Take That though, haven't you? Right? And I just, in a way, I just think, no, fuck off, it's shit.
It's
bullshit. It's just a load really of bollocks. Boring. Right? Don't think that because fucking Scary Spice had a stud in her tongue and kept sticking it out and wearing leopard print fucking dresses, right? That there was anything edgy or
you were being sold a facsimile of edginess and you lapped it up like the fucking scum that you are.
What is that Comedy Central chat show? I can't remember what it's called. I've got to look at it. No, there was just this. There's a funny US chat show that's sort of like a terrible sort of. It's like a parody of one of those late night American chat shows.
I don't know.
But anyway, one time the host of it, I'll find out what it is. But the host had Mel B on as a guest, and he said to her, "Did you love Mrs. Thatcher? Would she have been a Spice Girl?" And she does her trite kind of, "Yeah, of course. It's all about girl power." And he went, does that include her sending hired death squads into Northern Ireland to murder people? And the Scary Spice just looked blankly and literally looked off camera as if she was looking around for her agent. Help. Oh, this wasn't part of the plan, right? Because that contrived edginess is a million times worse than no edginess whatsoever, but isn't it?
All of that, and it was all done on the cheap as well in the early 80s. You got like Boy George getting his clothes from market stalls in London. And you've got Spandau coming out of a scene in, you know, new romantic nightclubs that were underground, dingy underground clubs.
But they made all their own stuff, didn't they?
It was all self-made. And it was then exploited and they went on and became massive. But we've kind of digressed away from Relax, but there's so much to talk about in this chart. We could go on and on for weeks about it, and I think we might do.
I think we might do because, like, you know, this is just, we've just talked a bit about Frankie Goes to Hollywood here. And I had this on 12-inch. I had Two Tribes on 12-inch. I was bought it for my birthday.
Well, we'll get on to Two Tribes later on. Let's not get into Two Tribes because that's a very different thing altogether, and that's another massive thing. But it was banned by Radio 1 and then by the BBC as a whole. It had been on Top of the Pops once. It had gone in under the radar, but then it was number 6. Then it was banned. Then it was number 2. And then it was number 1 for 5 weeks. And then it slowly went down the charts. It dropped off number 1 in 3rd of March 1984, so that's still 3.5 months before where we're at now. It was number 2, then 3, then 6, 16, 21, 23, 21, back up again, then down to 29, then still 29, 31, back up to 26, 12th of May, up to 24, up to 21, up to 17, 16, and I think it was 16 the week when Two Tribes came into the chart, so it was already going back up long before Two Tribes came out. It was just this out of control.
It was a phenomenon.
It was a phenomenon. And I remember you couldn't get it with that picture sleeve later on. And it wasn't because it had been banned or anything. It was just because they were having to put out so many copies of it, they couldn't produce enough picture sleeves. So it went out in like one of those black sleeves with a hole in the middle.
Makes it even cooler. I had a disco for my 9th birthday party, which would have been in April, a few months before this. But I'm pretty sure we had Frankie Goes to Hollywood then, right? Someone had got it for me as a present. I was allowed to, but my brothers were the DJs, right?
Right.
It felt really grown up to have a disco party, right?
Yeah.
I'd gotten the idea from a kids' TV show that I think was on Children's BBC, and I can't remember the name, but it was set at a seaside resort, not unlike the Isle of Wight. And I think that Yvette Fielding was an actress in it, so before she was on Blue Peter. And it was about teenagers growing up in this seaside town.
Right? Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And I can't remember what it's called,
was
but
it Scarborough or somewhere like that, was it?
Yeah, I just thought it was fucking wonderful, right? I'd love to look back on it because it was very 80s, the styling and everything. And in one of the episodes, one of the kids had a disco party. And I just looked at it. I thought, this is incredible. This is next level shit. Fuck McDonald's, right? And all these babies.
Sea View.
That's it. I'm going to watch it back on YouTube. And I thought, fuck fucking pass the parcel, right? I'm a man now. I'm a fucking man. And I'm going to fucking party like a man, yeah? And we're having a fucking disco at my gaff for my 9th fucking birthday. And we're going to listen to songs about bumming, right? Because that's the way fucking Delaney's rolling from now on, right? All that kiddie stuff's in the past. So it was brilliant because I had older brothers and they set up proper, like, you know, DJing table and got the record player out and the speakers set up in the living room. We cleared all the furniture to the sides. Mm-hmm. My brother Theo had a job in a proper office and he put loads of time and effort into using the photocopying machine and various other arts and crafts stuff you get in an office, right, to make a fucking sensational flyer for this party, which I used to have, but I lost in a house move for years. I kept it for years, right? And it was all done with Letraset and stuff like that, right?
Proper.
And it had a picture of Madonna, but like classic 1984 Desperately Seeking Susan Madonna, right, in the lace and all of that. And she had a speech bubble coming out of her mouth, and it said, and it's, you know, at the top it said Sam's 9th birthday party, right?
Anyone for bumming?
And it had a picture of her and it just said, I'll see you there, right? Ooh. And it was fucking great. So I had these and I was literally handing them out to people in the playground, like, this is my party. I handed them to the fattest boy in the school, Stephen Payne. And I said, here you go, this is my party. And he looked at it, and do you know what he did? He sneered, he went, I won't be coming to that. And I went, really? Why not? And he went, I hate Madonna. And I was like, she's not really going to be there, dickhead. And he was like, oh, why did it say it on the invite then? Why are you lying? Wanker. I'll never forget that. What a Lampard cunt. I'm glad he didn't come. But anyway, that it, the,
but
I
not
was allowed.
He's fat. Not because he's fat.
No, I've got no problem with his fatness. But, I mean, he was particularly fat, so that's why it's worthy of mention. He wasn't, like, a bit chubby. I mean, I was a bit chubby. He was, like...
There was always one in every school,
he was the fat
was
kid in the school.
Yeah.
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 And he...
We had one called John Smith, but not only was he incredibly fat, he was incredibly violent as well.
Was he?
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Stephen Payne wasn't really violent, thank God.
I had to think twice before mentioning his name there, just in case...
Because you're still scared of him.
Oh, yeah. Although I think he was walking with a stick last time I saw him, so maybe he's got gout.
Stephen Payne's parents were extraordinarily skinny.
Ooh.
And he was an only child, so everyone just assumed that all the food in the house went to him.
They fed him up because they were so in love with
him. They had to feed him like a beast.
Yeah. They created a beast.
Anyway, feed the beast. Where's my food? Have you been eating it?
No, son, I swear.
Fucking good. Because look at how powerful I am. If I became violent, I'd be very dangerous.
Yes, more. We know, son. We appreciate that. Here, have more food.
Anyway, I was allowed to buy one single for this party, right? Because we were mainly relying on my brother's records. And my mum said, you can go up to Smith's and get one single as a treat for the party.
Mm.
Well, what else was I going to buy? But fucking Easy Lover by Phil Collins and Philip Bailey. I'm not an idiot, am I? If you've only got one single to get a party going, right, whether it was then or now, you buy fucking Easy Lover, don't you?
What year was this, Sam? What birthday was this?
84. April 1984.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Did it check out?
I'm just checking the timeline, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no. Easy Lover came out November 84.
Okay. Maybe it was my 10th birthday. I definitely remember having Easy Lover.
Doesn't matter. It's all tied in.
Well, anyway.
You still would have played Relax at it. Bumming Anthem.
The Bumming Anthem was definitely getting a few spins.
I think we're going to draw this episode to a close because there's lots more to say about 1984.
What we've given you there is our 1984 overview and a slight dive into a couple of the singles. In the next part of this deep dive into this particular chart, we'll probably get a bit deeper into some of the other songs.
I'll tell you what we'll do, Sam, a little bit of homework for the next one. We'll look online at both of the videos for Relax because they made two videos, one that was suitable for TV, one that clearly wasn't suitable for TV. Mm. We'll look at them. We'll talk a bit more about Relax.
And decide which one was best.
Yeah. Well, it's not hard. We'll go into Two Tribes and the whole Frankie phenomenon, and we'll do other stuff in 1984.
We'll
isn't two-parter.
Jump for My Love by the Pointer Sisters.
Yeah.
Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper.
Like
Of You by Sister Sledge. I mean, for fuck's sake. And Change
As
of
I
Heart
said,
by Change. Come on.
There's 31 songs in this top 40 that I like. I would go 32 if I'm allowed to like Dance Me Up by Gary Glitter, which I don't think I am anymore.
You're not allowed. We won't mention
that. I'm not allowed. 31. 31 of the 40. So there we are. We'll be back. We might knock another one out next week for the second part of this, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think we should keep this going, mate.
Definitely.
I think we need to keep momentum on this chart. There's so much to say. Yeah. Give us your 1984 memories, pop pickers.
No!
Oh, no. Don't do that. It'd be awful.
Hours are bad enough. But go and look at the two videos for Relax. That's your homework for next time. Thanks for listening. TTFN, dickheads.
All the best. God bless.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.